tell me anything. You are a true exception in my life. It sounded like she said she was in love. I then told her all the things that I had thought I better keep inside, all of which revealed I was in love.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from All Sources Rock. This includes today ClassicRock.com, BGORecords.com, NewYorkTimes.com, The Week Magazine, RollingStone.com, and Entertainment Weekly Magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This opening number is brought to us by Sondre Lurch. The title of this tune is The Curse of Being in Love. We'll be hearing more about and from Sondre Lurch later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us from ClassicRock.com. Classic Rock's Fascinating Facts. Name either the singer or the writer of that 1960 number one hit, Running Bear. Question number two. Elvis weighed 170 pounds at his adult height of 6 foot in 1960. How much did he weigh when he died? The answers to these important trivia questions will be given at the end of today's program. The transition section of today's program is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com. Today in rock history. And today is February 20th. So what were the number one hits back in 1965 on February 20th? It was Gary Lewis with This Diamond Ring. Now, if you were born on February 20th, you share a birthday with Nancy Wilson, who was born on this day, February 20th, 1937. Barbara Ellis of the Fleetwoods, born in 1940 on this date, and Buffy St. Marie, born in 1941 on February 20th. Jerome Giles of the J. Giles Band, born in 1946 on this date. Walter Becker of Steely Dan, born in 1950 on February 20th. John Brandt of Cheap Trick, born in 1954 on this date. And finally, Kurt Cobain, born in 1967 on February 20th. Miscellany in rock history on this date, February 20th. We see back in 1955, it was Big Joe Turner releasing Flip Flop and Fly in the U.S. Back in 1970, on this date, it was Timothy Leary, international laureate of LSD and candidate for governorship for California, sentenced to 10 years in jail for possession of marijuana. And back on 1974, on February 20th, it was Yes, sell out Madison Square Gardens, New York. Nothing unusual about that, except that they didn't advertise. Tickets sold in 2 days on word of mouth alone. Back in 1982, this weekend, it was Vangelis' Chariots of Fire hitting the U.S. LP chart. Back in 1982, on February 20th, it was Pat Benatar marrying her guitarist, Neil Girardo, in Hawaii. Back in 1988, on this date, February 20th, nearly 17 years after his death, Louis Armstrong has the highest debut U.S. single of the week when What a Wonderful World comes in at number 67. And finally, back in 1997 on this date, February 20th, fish are immortalized in ice cream. Ben and Jerry's new flavor, Fish Food, contains chocolate ice cream, marshmallows, caramel, and fish-shaped fudge. What about this day in rock history back in February 21? Well, on February 21, the number one hits back in 1963 were Frank Ifeld, Wayward Wind. And back in 1976, on February 21, it was the Four Seasons with December 63. Dolly Parton, 9 to 5, back in 1981 on this date. REO Speedwagon High Fidelity, back in 1981, that same weekend, February 21. Britney Spears, back in 1999, Baby One More Time was the number one hit on February 21. If you were born on February 21, you share a birthday with Nina Simone. She was born on that day back in 1933. David Geffen, head of Geffen Label, born in 1943 on February 21. Jerry Harrison, Talking Heads, born on February 21, 1949. And Mary Chapin Carpenter, born on February 21, 1958. Murray, the K. Kaufman, known as the Fifth Beatle, died on this day, February 21, back in 1982. Miscellany and rock history on this date, February 21, we see back in 1958 that Ricky Nelson debuted on the charts with Stood Up. Back in 1964, it was Billy J. Kramer releasing Little Children, his second number one hit. Back in 1964, that same year, this same day, February 21, the Rolling Stones release Not Fade Away. Back in 1964, that same day, this same day, and that same year, February 21, the Hollies released Just One Look, on its way to becoming number two. Back in 1970, on February 21, it was Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Water LP, enters the chart at number one, staying in the top 10 for 126 weeks. And finally, on February 21, back in 1975, David Bowie releases Young Americans. In contemporary news, we see this article from the NewYorkTimes.com, published on February 10th, 2010, by John Pareles, entitled Music That Changed History and Still Resonates. Washington, D.C., half a dozen legislators sat a few feet away under the crystal chandeliers of the East Room of the White House as Bob Dylan sang The Times They Are A-Changing, poker-faced. Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call, he rasped. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall. His tone was rough, but almost wistful. He had turned his old exhortation into an autumnal waltz. Afterward, he stepped off stage and shook President Obama's hand. It was part of In Performance at the White House, a celebration of music from the civil rights movement. The program was the Black History Month event in Michelle Obama's continuing music series at the White House and was broadcast February the 11th on PBS. It was not lost on anyone that Mr. Obama is America's first African-American president. The civil rights movement was a movement sustained by music, Mr. Obama said in opening remarks. The music, he said, was inspired by the movement and gave strength in return. Mr. Dylan shared the bill, though not the stage, with fellow musicians who regularly sang at civil rights rallies in the early 1960s, Joan Baez and Bernice Johnson Reagon with the Freedom Singers, and a cross-generational gathering of performers, Smokey Robinson, Jennifer Hudson, John Mellencamp, Yolanda Adams, Natalie Cole, the Blind Boys of Alabama, and the Howard University Choir. With a new snowstorm moving in on an already snowy capital, the program took place a day early. In the afternoon, Mr. Robinson, Miss Adams, the Freedom Singers, and the Blind Boys sang for schoolchildren in the state dining room. If any music can claim to have changed history, it was the songs of the civil rights movement. Rooted in the hymns, gospel, and rural ballads of the Southland they set out to change, civil rights songs seized a moral high ground with their melodies as well as their words. The article skips down. There was other music directly from the civil rights movement, but the night wasn't all protest songs and reproposed gospel hymns. It ranged through the 1960s and into the 70s when Miss Cole sang Marvin Gaye's What's Going On from 1971. The tone of the program shifted between celebration and reflection. Mr. Robinson, in a peculiar choice, performed Abraham, Martin, and John. Dion DiMucci's Elegy for Murdered Leaders. Ms. Baez called for a sing-along from the invited audience and got one on We Shall Overcome. She recalled the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.'s deciding to protest the Vietnam War. Before she sang, she told Mr. and Mrs. Obama, "You are so much love." The article skips down, but we finish there. This next article is also from the New York Times, newyorktimes.com. Available soon at a Barnes & Noble near you, The Nook. This was published on February the 8th, 2010. Our colleague, Motoko Rich, reports on the Media Decoder blog that Barnes & Noble stores will finally have the Nook e-reader in stock starting February the 10th. Until this point, customers had to order the Nook online. By the way, that's spelled N-O-O-K, although stores had demonstration models. Now, from that particular blog, we see the following. Barnes & Noble, the country's largest book-selling chain, said that its Nook electronic reading device would be available for purchase in stores starting February the 10th. The Nook, which has been selling through Barnes & Noble's website since late November, has only been seen in demonstration form in bookstores. Analyst had originally said that one of Barnes & Noble's competitive advantages against Amazon.com's Kindle device was that the bookstore had physical outlets through which it could sell the Nook. Barnes & Noble sold out of its initial supply of Nooks before the holiday season, citing higher-than-expected demand. In stores, customers could view some demonstration devices, but could not buy them on the spot until now. Customers looking for stores where the Nook is in stock can check online. This next article is from The Week magazine, February the 12th, 2010. Carrie's racial identity. Maria Carey is comfortable with her biracial background, says Elizabeth Day in the London Observer, but the world often isn't. The 39-year-old singer's father was a black man of Venezuelan descent, and her mother was Irish-American. She grew up in Long Island, New York, where, she says, racist neighbors poisoned the family's dog and set fire to their car. But she only realized she was different when she took her white best friend to see her father. She got out of the car and went up the stairs to his house, and he was over 6 feet tall and very handsome. But to her, he must have really been scary, because I don't know that she'd ever seen a black man before. And she looked at him, her mouth went open, and she started screaming and crying. He was trying to calm her down, but it didn't work. Because Carrie is light complexion, people still don't know how to classify her. She's been asked numerous times why she always has black people in her videos. I'm like, how many times do I have to tell you my father was black? My mother's white. In this country, that makes you black. Do you understand? I know I'm very light-skinned, but stop doing that. It's one of those things the world doesn't quite understand. This next article is also from the NewYorkTimes.com. Associated Press published on February 9th, 2010. Ringo Starr honored with Walk of Fame star, Los Angeles. A star for former Beatles drummer Ringo Starr has been added to the Hollywood Walk of Fame. At a whimsical ceremony outside the Capitol Records building Monday evening, Starr's name was unveiled as the 2,401st star on the sidewalk attraction. The Hollywood Walk of Fame also marked its 50th anniversary of groundbreaking Monday. Those by Starr's side for the unveiling included actress-wife Barbara Bach, musicians Jay Walsh and Ben Harper, producer Don Was, director David Lynch, and actor Noah Wyle. The Walk of Fame also includes individual stars for the Beatles drummer's former bandmates John Lennon and George Harrison. The Beatles received a star in 1998. The Hollywood Walk of Fame attracts an estimated 10 million visitors annually to the 18-block stretch lining Hollywood Boulevard and Vine Street. So who is this artist that opened today's program and will close it at all as well? Sondre Lerche, well, his bio comes to us directly from his own website, sondrelerche.com. Born and raised in Bergen, Norway, Lerche was inspired by the music he heard emanating from his older siblings' bedrooms, be it a-ha, Elvis Costello, or classic rock. Inspired, he picked up the guitar at age of 8 and as a teenager performed at open mics at the club where his sister worked. Before his 16th birthday, he was signed to Virgin EMI. I had to start singing to get all these songs out there, he says. No one else was going to. Lurch's triumphs and travails over the last few years certainly left a mark. He moved to the U.S. and dealt with various practical matters, including some green card issues, forcing some delays. But he also recorded the soundtrack to the hit movie Dan in Real Life. The director wanted a musician to work with, and he convinced both me and the Disney Corporation that I was the only one who could do it. And most importantly, Lurch left his major label home and struck out on his own. Heartbeat Radio, his most current offering, is certainly Lurch's boldest and most challenging record. While it maintains the studio polish of his groundbreaking debut, Faces Down, there's also a sense of musical adventure that stems from his later work. The songs mix acoustic guitars with grand gestures of orchestral pop with elements of anything from 50s jazz via 60s and 70s Brazilian psych folk to state-of-the-art 80s pop masters such as Prefab Sprout, Skritti Politti, and Fleetwood Mac. The article then skips down. Lurch released his first record, Faces Down, in 2001 and earned a Best New Artist Award at the Norwegian Grammys. That record also made its mark here in the U.S. Rolling Stone named it one of the 50 best records of the year. Two-Way Monologue, 2004, Duper Sessions, 2006, and Phantom Punch, 2007, followed, along with a number of EPs and tours with everyone from Elvis Costello to No Joke. Aha. Los Angeles Times said Lurch is one of the most talented new names in contemporary pop. Rolling Stone, on the 2007 album Phantom Punch, says spunky winners like the title track suggests that Lurch has absorbed the early work of his tour mate Elvis Costello. In the end, another reminder of a budding talent. Back on May 24, 2006, Jolly Lash wrote this review for RollingStone.com entitled Sondre Lurch Packs Pop Punch on New Album. Inspired by Elvis Costello, Norwegian crooner strips it down and gets primitive. Known as one of Norway's premier young pop balladeers, Sondre Lurch is preparing to embrace a new sound for his fourth album, tentatively titled Phantom Punch. Once again, this was published back in 2006. Meeting up with Rolling Stone at Los Angeles' Sunset Sound Recording Studios, Lurch, in a vintage Aha tee and paisley scarf, says the effort will be made up of tougher, less orchestral material, inspired in part by touring with Elvis Costello. Seeing Elvis with his band doing the rock stuff every night, it really energized me, he says with a smile. It made me just want to get back into playing with my band and trying to write some short, punchy songs. Sessions for the record were initially conducted on the East Coast with Rafael Sadiq, but those recordings were shelved after Lurch and his band, Faces Down, took his sophomore effort, 2004's Two-Way Monologue, on tour with the famously spectacled rocker. Lurch says he returned with a flurry of ideas and began searching for a new partner in crime. I thought, I gotta make this record with someone who doesn't just think this could be interesting, but someone who wants to do it. He turned to Tony Hoffer, Beck, and Air. Due to scheduling conflicts, Phantom Punch had to be delayed, and Lurch absconded to Norway, where he laid down another new set of songs for Duper Sessions. It's a record I'm desperately happy with, Lurch says of the easygoing album, which includes a cover of Costello's Human Hands. It's kind of fun because it comes out right before Phantom, and it's really the opposite, a really romantic, very old-fashioned pop record. So does that mean Phantom Punch is its punk antithesis? It's not a punk record. I'm Sondre Lurch, the smooth-faced crooner says with a laugh. But I definitely wanted to make a record that has a more primitive attitude. And I mean primitive in the best sense. I wanted a record that was more direct, concise, simpler songs. I didn't want to mess about with strings or these lush arrangements I'd been perfecting on a couple of the other records. I wanted to make songs that you could just take up the guitar and bang away and get into that sort of physical energy. Slated for the effort are cuts including Tragic Mirror, Well, 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 The Tape, and Happy Birthday Girl. It's kind of a birthday song, but it's probably a couple of blocks away from, he sings, Happy Birthday to You, said Lurch. It's a slow, noisy one. But it's the potential title track, Phantom Punch, that Lurch seems most thrilled with. That one's actually a disco waltz. I'm hoping it's the first of its kind, he says. My wife and I were going to IKEA in Newark, New Jersey, so we were taking the free bus that runs from Penn Station. On the way back, I had this riff in my head, and I recorded it on my cell phone. I haven't done that before. It's my first riff song. It's got a real rock riff. So let's listen to some snippets from Sondre Lurch. We'll start off with On the Tower. Then we'll get into Maybe You're Gone. Finally, we'll hear After All. Then after some reviews of contemporary songs, we'll close out today's program with Sondre Lurch on It's Over. But first, On the Tower.
If that's a tear I see, if it's because of me, then I may well have to tell you what I would do. But to play is easier than to set the groove, and to think is more simple than changing the mood. Is it more, is it less, what's that thing on your chest? Won't you whisper your blues as heartfelt as you can?
Maybe You're Gone.
You have been waiting all your life. You use your patience to stay fine. Time moves on as you prepare to tell yourself be reasonable. Then come the times you can't foresee. You cannot leave, you can't relieve. To keep you far from those dreams, ignoring the right times. Oh, waiting was my life. For now it's too late, and you may not wait. And things that I have yet to.
And now a snippet from After All.
I like you too much after too little time. I hold back my heart's crazy rambling. The fear that I should overwhelm your smile frightens the spiders inside me. Oh, this could be magic after all, after all. You daren't defy what just happened to us. Well, I've had a name for it for some time. Will you try to find what it is that you feel? I long to tell you so truly. Oh, this could be trouble after all, after all.
And once again, we'll close out today's program with Sondre Lurch. It's Over. But first, these reviews. This article comes to us from Entertainment Weekly, their special Oscar Guide 2010, entitled Grading the Grammys, Gaga and Elton Austin, Taylor and Stevie. Well, our critic weighs in on the night's biggest performances by Leah Greenblatt. Trophies? Sure, they passed out a few in prime time, 10 to be exact. But the 3.5-hour broadcast true raison d'être was, of course, the tireless A-list cavalcade of spangled, sensational, increasingly extravagant live performances. Here are the highs, some of them literally, and one unfortunate low. Lady Gaga and Elton John. Gaga bedazzled disco leprechaun in a steampunk fame factory recast dance smash Poker Face as a lady sings the blues burner before being joined by Sir Elton. Likewise, sooty and sequined. Their full-throated renditions of her Speechless and his Your Song set the tone for a night of one-up womanship. A-minus. Green Day, flanked by the cast of American Idiot, a new stage musical largely based on their 04 album, Berkeley's, Platinum Punks turned snarling anthem, 21 Guns, into a rousing rock opera, two parts fist-pumping guitar discord to one part Rent, with a giddy glee garnish, given a B+. Beyonce, the army of stormtroopers behind her, possibly there to protect Sasha from her own fierceness, an unbeweavable cyclone of whipping hair. The evening 6-time winner delivered her gender equality anthem, If I Were a Boy, and Alanis Morissette's classic woman-scorned wail, You Oughta Know, with blazing conviction, given an A-minus by Greenblatt. Pink, draped in a latticework of ribbons, the nearly nude star showcased the high-altitude acrobatics of her funhouse tour while maintaining stunning vocal form on the lovely but largely unknown Glitter in the Air. Few can nail those notes on the ground, let alone suspended, 30 feet above it, soaking wet, given an A-. Michael Jackson tribute. Celine Dion, Jennifer Hudson, Usher, Carrie Underwood, and Smokey Robinson sang along with the late King of Pop on a poignant powerhouse reprise of his echo epic Earth Song, followed by Jackson's children, whose speech felt gratifyingly awkward, heartfelt, and unrehearsed. B+. And finally, Taylor Swift and Stevie Nicks, an odd swig of soda pop mixed with Merlot. Taylor, game but pitchy, lacked the aptitude for Fleetwood Mac's sumptuous Rhiannon, and Nick's on Swift's You Belong With Me was the sonic equivalent of putting the leather and lace icon in pigtails and Abercrombie. What befits a legend and an ingenue? Alas, none of the above, given only a C. In that same issue of Entertainment Weekly, we see this review of Beach House, Teen Dream. This Baltimore duo's first two albums were intent on mastering one specific sound, spare, sleepy psychedelia. On their third LP, they evolve at last, adding more variety behind Victoria Legrand's wonderfully weary vocals. None of the changes are drastic, but together they're just enough to cover Beach House's once monochrome canvases with washes of brilliant color, given an A- by Simon Wojcik Levinson. Download these brightly shimmering single, Norway, jaunty piano-driven, Used to Be. So, how'd you do on the trivia questions for today? First question was, name either the singer or the writer of that 1960 hit, Running Bear. That was, of course, J.P. Richardson. He's known as the Big Bopper. He wrote Running Bear, the tragic number one hit love song that Johnny Preston sang in 1960. Second question, Elvis weighed 170 pounds at his adult height of 6 foot in 1960. How much did he weigh when he died? Elvis's lightest adult weight was 170 in 1960, following his discharge from the U.S. Army. Elvis had gained almost 100 pounds by the time of his death in the following decade, weighing 260 pounds, his heaviest weight ever.
It's not over at all, I'm just trying to smile, I know perfectly well. Such are things we both know, and we think we should say, just to organize the stains. Systems reveal their construction these days, as we escape to drift further away.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.